as the model carpenter, began his ministry. It seemed almost instantaneous that he was met with criticism. John chapter 1, verse 11 tells us that he came to his own, and his own received him not. If you're to look into Mark chapter 2, you notice that the scribes and the Pharisees, they tossed accusations at Jesus. They said he was a blasphemous person. They said he was a friend to sinners. They said he was a negligent teacher, that he was disobedient. As much good as Jesus was trying to accomplish, there was always someone who had a complaint to make against Jesus, someone who had an accusation to throw in his direction, someone to pass along blame to Jesus for the condition of Israel. It's hard to believe that Jesus never experienced any frustration. Well, the matter of fact is, Jesus did experience frustration. But unlike you and me, Jesus was able to deal with all of his frustrations in the appropriate way every single time. He knew how to deal with them. We all experience frustrations, likely to some degree, every day of our lives. You'd be hard-pressed to find someone here in this number who hasn't experienced some type of frustration in the last week, maybe even as recent as this morning. Maybe it was a frustration at the workplace or with a family member or with a friend, or maybe frustration with people just out in the world. Most of us here, we drive cars. There are many other drivers out there who might lead us to a great amount of frustration. We all experience frustration in our life, and there's nothing wrong with being frustrated or in any of these situations, but it's all a matter of how we handle it, how we deal with it, whether or not that frustration will lead us to sin or if we get a handle on it. Jesus experienced frustrations. He had to. After all, he was dealing with humans. This morning, we take a look into Mark chapter 3. I want us to recognize four potentially frustrating situations that Jesus had to deal with that I believe every single one of us would be able to relate to. Now, it would be impossible for us to exhaust all of the different passages in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John that show us how Jesus dealt with frustrations. We wouldn't be able to exhaust all the different ways in which we are frustrated and what we can learn from Jesus and how to deal with those things. But I do believe that by the time we're finished talking about these four this morning, these four lessons that we can learn from the example of Jesus, I think that we can apply these exact same truths, these exact same principles to our lives as we strive to follow the blueprint of Jesus Christ. And if there's a blueprint for us to learn today, it's simply this. Anytime we encounter aggravating circumstances, we can react to them with humility and with grace, just like Jesus did. And when you boil it all down, basically it comes down to this. You won't be able to please everyone, but you can please God. So do what's right. You can't please everyone, but you can please God. So do what's right. If we do what's right, we will please God. So let's look at our first point this morning. We can react righteously to complaints. If someone ever wants to find a fault about someone, they can find it. People can at times be very creative in looking at the lives of others. It's amazing to me how creative people can be whenever they want to find a fault, when they want to make a complaint against someone. If someone wants to find a reason to complain about you, they'll find it. People will complain. And it doesn't matter what you do. You can do all things right, and people will find a reason to complain about you, to make accusations and blame you for something. It's easy for people to go on a fault-finding tour. And we know that because we've probably done that at some point in our lives as well. I want you to take a look with me at Mark chapter 3, verses 1 through 6. Mark 3, beginning in verse 1. "And he," that's Jesus, "entered the synagogue, and a man was there with a withered hand. And they watched Jesus to see whether he would heal him on the Sabbath, so that they might accuse him. And he said to the man with a withered hand, 'Come here.' And he said to them, 'Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do harm, to save life or to kill?' But they were silent." And here we see the frustration. He looked around at them with anger, grieved at their hardness of heart, and said to the man, "Stretch out your hand." He stretched it out, and his hand was restored. Then the Pharisees went out immediately and plotted with the Herodians against him how they might destroy him. These are people who stepped on the scene, the scribes and the Pharisees. They stepped on the scene just to see what Jesus would do wrong. They were looking for an opportunity to bring an accusation against him. They were fault-finding. They were going to try to find anything that they could do to make a complaint against Jesus. And I would venture to guess that had Jesus, now I believe that he was going to heal this man regardless, but had Jesus not healed this man with a withered hand, they still would have found something to complain about because they were looking for it. You see Jesus, and here you see emotions. You see his frustration. He was angered. He was grieved with them. Jesus was a sinless man, yet he still felt frustration. So how did he deal with it? Well, as always, he dealt with it perfectly. To begin with, he didn't let them push him over. Jesus never called for us to be pushovers. In the same regard, he's never called for us to push people back over either. Remember the teaching in the Sermon on the Mount. If someone strikes you on the cheek, what do? Well, you don't turn their other cheek. You turn your other cheek to them. But Jesus was never a pushover, and he certainly wasn't here. What Jesus did, he did the right thing. He spoke the right words. He acted in the right way, with the right attitude. There was no way that Jesus was going to please these men. So he simply did what was right. If you're involved in the work of the Lord in any capacity, you're going to encounter those who have complaints against you. So what do? Be grieved in your heart. You can be angry, just as Jesus was in this situation. But take a lesson from Jesus. Don't neglect to do what is right. Do what is right. Look at what Jesus said in verse 4. He said, "Is it lawful on the Sabbath to do good or to do evil? To save life or to kill?" You choose to do what is right. Remember, you're not going to be able to please everybody, but you can please God. So do what is right. We move along to our second point this morning. We can react graciously to pressure. Look again with me into Mark chapter 3, beginning in verse 7. We'll work our way down to about verse 12. You know, if you take a good look at the Gospels, you recognize how the crowds were fascinated with Jesus. It seemed that anywhere that Jesus needed to go, anywhere that Jesus wanted to go, there was always a crowd following him. There were many times where the crowds wanted to crown him as king. Jesus was popular with the crowds. There was even a time when the chief priests looked at each other and said, "The whole world is going after him." They were trying to figure out what they were going to do with Jesus because the crowds kept flocking to him. They were begging Jesus to heal them. They were breaking through roofs to be able to see him. They were coming in droves to be able to listen to what he had to say. So many people were coming to see Jesus that some weren't even able to see him. We remember one short man who had to climb in a tree just to get a look at the Lord. The crowds were that big. The crowds loved Jesus because he taught them simple truth and because he loved them. But sometimes the crowds could be a little bit overwhelming. And such is the case as we find in verses 7 through 12 of Mark chapter 3. The crowds became so great that Jesus had to tell his disciples to get into a boat. Look with me at verses 9 and 10. He told his disciples that a small boat should be kept ready for him because of the multitude, lest they should crush him. For he healed many, so that as many as had afflictions pressed about him to touch him. That word pressed in verse 10 literally means that they rushed upon him. Have you ever been to Walmart on Black Friday? You ever seen people rushing to get that one item? Sometimes even a fight might break out. People rushing to get that hot new item. Can you imagine how the people were rushing just to be able to get to Jesus? Most people believed that in order for Jesus to heal them, he had to touch them. And so the people, you can imagine, were rushing to try to get to touch Jesus or have Jesus touch them. So Jesus tells the apostles, "Get into the boat, or we may be crushed." This wasn't the way that Jesus wanted to die. Jesus had to die on the cross. He needed to preserve his life. They were pressing him. And so what did Jesus do? He stepped back. Jesus could have healed people, and that could have been his entire ministry. That could have been all it was about, healing people. But that wasn't the entirety of his ministry, was it? Jesus also came to deliver a message. And somehow Jesus' fame, with all of his healing, seemed to gather more of the people's attention than sometimes his message did. In John chapter 6, in verse 26, Jesus had a large crowd of people following after him, not necessarily for the purposes that he wanted them to be following him. He said, "Most assuredly I say to you, you seek me not because you saw the signs, but because you ate of the loaves and you were filled." They wanted Jesus to provide for them physically, but Jesus wanted to provide for them spiritually. So you can imagine how frustrating this must have been for Jesus to have all of these crowds gathering around him and not being able to help them because the crowd was so large. So what did Jesus do? He backed up. He took a step back and he focused his attention on what was also important, his teaching. Jesus focused his attention on what was right. Now, I doubt that there's a single person in here who has that great of a problem with crowds. Now, some of you I know are very popular. And I realize there may be days in your life where you're doing everything you can to hide out from the American press paparazzi. I know you can be popular. But most of us, we don't have to deal with crowds like that. It's not a very frustrating thing for us. But you know, it doesn't take a large crowd for us to experience the frustration of pressure. Do you have a talent Do you have an ability? What about some kind of special knowledge on a particular subject or a vast number of subjects? Maybe you have a generous pocketbook. Do you have wisdom? Maybe a particular attitude that's really inviting to people. They need someone to talk to, and they know you're just the type of person they can talk to. Maybe you find yourself being pressured when people desire your services. We need to be able to use our talents. We need to be able to use our abilities, our knowledge, and any gift that God has given to us. We need to use those things to the best of our ability. But whenever we feel the pressure, the frustration of being overwhelmed with obligations, we need to take a lesson from Jesus. Take a step back. Now, don't stop doing what's important, but focus your attention on what is right, just like Jesus did. Jesus could have continued to heal and to heal and to heal, but instead, what he did was step back, and he began to teach because that's what was needed. You can fulfill your obligation to use your talents, but if you feel the pressure, step back for a second and make sure you don't stop doing what is right. I've seen it before. I'm sure you've seen it before. People feel pressure. Oh, people are always asking me to do this or to do that, and so they just stop doing everything. Don't do that. Take a step back and focus your attention on what is right. You can't please everyone, but you can please God. So do what is right. The third point I want us to recognize this morning is that we can react humbly to discouragement. For several years, I've had the privilege of having a really incredible support group in my life. My family and my friends have always been supportive of my decision to enter into the ministry. Now, we're all ministers. I understand that if we're Christians, we're ministers. But what I'm talking about is moving into the role of a minister. And I can't think really of a single individual who's ever discouraged me from pursuing this path. Even my former employer, who wasn't a Christian, he didn't want me to leave. He wanted me to stay, but he encouraged me to follow my passion. He thought it was respectful. And I'm thankful for my family. I'm thankful for my church family. I'm thankful for the many friends I have who have encouraged me over the years. I don't guess I've ever experienced the discouragement that Jesus must have faced with his family and with his friends. You see it in Mark chapter 3, verses 20 and 21. Jesus went home, and the crowd gathered again so that they could not so much as eat bread. But when his family heard it, they went out to seize him, for they were saying, "He is out of his mind." Can you imagine trying to do the work of the Lord and your family looking at you and thinking that you're out of your mind? Look down a little further at verses 31 through 35. His mother and his brothers came, and standing outside, they sent to him, calling him. And a crowd was sitting around him, and they said to him, "Look, your mother and your brothers are here seeking you." I would imagine it was for the very same reason as before. They were concerned. He was out of his mind. He was crazy. Verse 33, he answered them, "Who is my mother or my brothers?" And he looked around in a circle at those who sat about him, and he said, "Here are my mother and my brothers. For whoever does the will of God is my brother and my sister and my mother." I would imagine that out of all the people that Jesus desired to be involved in his ministry, it was his family he wanted the most. But they thought he was out of his mind. John chapter 7, verse 5 tells us that even his brothers didn't believe him. Can you imagine how frustrating that would be? I would imagine some of you know. Some of you probably know what it's like. But what did Jesus do? He didn't disown his family. He didn't curse them. He didn't belittle them. He didn't condemn them. I would suggest to you this morning that he appreciated their concern. But he still acknowledged what's right. He said, "Who are my mother and my brothers?" And he looked around at the people who were sitting there with him, those who were desiring to do the will of God. He looked at them and he said, "These are my mother and my brothers. This is my family." Jesus was concerned more about matters that are important to God. He was more concerned about those who were obedient to the will of God. Jesus didn't disown his family, but he did acknowledge what was right. I'd imagine that there are some, if not several, who are here this morning who have been discouraged at some point or another by family or friends. They don't understand your zeal for the Lord. They don't understand why you'd get up early on a Sunday morning to go to Bible study at 9:30 and worship at 10:30. Why would you do that? Maybe they say, "Well, I love Jesus too, but I can't stay in the church." Does that make any sense? You can't love the head and hate the body. When someone says, "I love Jesus, but I hate the church," that's what they're trying to say. You can't love Christ and hate his body. But that's some of the discouragement that we might receive from others. Maybe we have a family member that sees us, and maybe at one time in your life you followed a different path. You followed a different creed. And now that family member sees you and they see where you are and they consider you as one who has forsaken the family's traditions. You've dishonored the family's past. I'm sure some of you have experienced discouragement like that. So what do? Follow the example of the model carpenter. Don't disown them. Appreciate their concern. But acknowledge what's right. Again, you can't please everyone. But you can please God. So do what is right. Our last point this morning. We'll use this point to lead us into the invitation. We can react boldly to jealousy. You know what jealousy is? Jealousy is a poison that's poured onto good things. You have a service. Someone who is jealous of it will pour poison on it. You have a message to share. You want to tell the world what Jesus has done for you. Jealousy will pour poison on that. You have a talent to use in service to God. Jealousy will pour poison on it. You have an attitude of encouragement, an attitude of love and compassion. Jealousy will pour poison on it. And Jesus recognized that there were people who were jealous of all that he was accomplishing. They were jealous of the world chasing after him, wanting to know him, wanting to learn from him. We look back at Mark chapter 3, verse 22, and the scribes and the Pharisees who came down from Jerusalem said, "He is possessed by Beelzebub, and by the prince of the demons, he casts out demons." They couldn't bring themselves to say that he was doing those miraculous things by the power of God, because that would be admitting that he was the Son of God And they certainly couldn't bring themselves to do that. So the only other choice, he must be of the devil. As we mentioned before, Jesus was never a pushover. And he certainly wasn't going to be a pushover in this instance. Now, Jesus realized that they were no longer discrediting him. They were discrediting his Father. And Jesus could not remain silent. He knew the source. He knew the source of the accusation. And considering the source, he boldly stood in defense of God. He defended what is right. Notice verses 23 through 30. Jesus looked at these men and basically he said, "You're not discrediting me, you're discrediting God. I'm performing these miracles by the Spirit of my God. And by you saying I'm doing this by the power of the devil, you be warned," he says, "because the words that you speak may well lead you into a sin of which you will never be able to escape." Jesus took a defense. And church, in our lives, even as we desire to live peaceably among men, if there's ever a criticism, if there's a complaint, if there's a blame or an accusation that's thrown in our direction, it may not just affect us. It may go to the discredit of our God. And when that happens, we must speak boldly. Compassionately, yes. Lovingly, yes. But boldly in defense of our God. You can't please everyone, but you can please God. Do what is right. As we think about the frustrations that Jesus experienced and must have experienced while he was upon this earth, I wonder what sort of frustrations that Jesus experiences now as he looks down upon us and perhaps sees us not walking in the path of righteousness, but instead choosing for ourselves to walk down a path of sin. I wonder how Jesus feels to look down upon souls that know the Word of God. Souls who believe in the Word of God but haven't made any changes to their life. They're not willing to confess publicly that Jesus is the Son of God. They're not willing to be baptized to have their sins washed away. I would imagine that there's frustration there. But if the example of Jesus while he was on this earth is any indication of who he is now, and it is, this I know: Jesus' desire is for what is right. He's not wanting to disown you. He's not wanting to push you over. His desire is not for God's wrath to come upon you. His desire is for what's right for your soul. Is that your desire this morning? If it is, and we can help you in any way, please come while we stand and sing.